If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tasteofchicago.com to order today.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Anna, good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Start with an important anniversary in the world of comedy.
Oh, huge one, right? This week, 65 years ago, Bob, the Second City Comedy Troupe opened its doors for the first time. Originally, just operating out of a little storefront in Old Town, created by a group of University of Chicago grads, by the way, including legendary future director, I guess, at this time. He was just coming out of college as a UC grad, but Mike Nichols was one of the original core group that started it. It quickly became a powerhouse in the comedy scene, just earning nationwide respect and developing a who's who in the modern history of comedic actors, as we know. One of my favorite parts, Bob, about going to Second City is to walk along and look at the wall of photos. You're like, wow,
yeah.
He came through here? She came? Or he, him too? Like, it's just amazing how all-encompassing it is in the world of modern comedy. I mean, we all know the Dan Aykroyds, the Steve Martins, the Gilda Radners, the John Belushis, John Candy, Bill Murray, Jason Sudeikis, Tina Fey, I mean, Amy Poehler. It just goes on and on and on. So many people not only came through there, but later pointed out that was such an important part of their rise in the comedy world, where they really cut their teeth and learned their craft and always looked back on it in interviews. A launching pad for so many people. And we pulled up some audio here from some voices I think you'll recognize talking about their days at Second City.
My daughter once asked me, what's the most fun you've had in show business? And I said, without a doubt, it was Second City Theater main stage doing that sketch 7 times a week with Chris right in your face.
I was an improviser at Second City and at a place called the Improv Olympic in Chicago. And I talk in the book about improv having really kind of changed my professional life and even sort of my worldview a little bit.
You have said if there were no Second City, there'd be no Joan Rivers.
The experience was the best in my life. I learned to improvise. I learned what I think I should say because it's going to be funny, and that's who I am. So all that was, God loves Second City. God bless Second City for that.
Joan Rivers, before that, Tina Fey and Bob Odenkirk. I remember in high school seeing John Belushi, Bill Murray, and Harold Ramis on stage. And, of course, there would be no Saturday Night Live if not for Second City.
Not at all. Did you know they were great then, Bob?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you could tell.
Yep.
Yeah.
They were unbelievably funny and so talented as actors as well. Well, let's get to a great sports moment here. December 12 of 1965.
Yeah, legendary Bears player Gale Sayers had the game of his life this week in 1965, Bob. One of the most memorable Bears game ever, if you were alive at that time and lucky enough to be at that game. One of the greatest single-player performances in the history of the NFL. December 12, 1965, Gale Sayers tied an NFL record for most touchdowns scored in a single game. 6 touchdowns. He did it this week, and he did it in his rookie year. It's a record that has not been broken since. Sports Illustrated pointed out a couple years ago that there's been, over 10,000 games played in the NFL since that time. Thousands of players, dozens if not hundreds of greats, and no one has broken or tied that record. Gale Sayers did it in the mud, a very muddy game at Wrigley when the Bears still played there. And Yahoo Sports voted it the greatest single performance in NFL history. Mike Ditka even called it that in an interview. We pulled a clip going back to 1965 and Gale Sayers, that magical moment.
Gale Sayers, a sensational rookie from Kansas, as he goes all the way, 80 yards for a touchdown. The quick move of Gale Sayers, he's off 85 yards for a touchdown. His 6th touchdown of the game, he has just broken the National Football League touchdown record for 1 year, 21 this season for Gale Sayers.
Seemed like everybody was slipping but me. I had the same thing, cleats that they had on, but I just had a great day, and I couldn't believe that I was having that kind of a day. I wasn't concerned about records because we didn't have record books on the sideline like they do today. You know, if we would have had record books on the sideline, I probably could have scored 8 touchdowns. But when I saw one person, one tackler, he's dead. I knew that. I'm looking behind him. You know, and that's the way I approach the game. You know, hey, I had that God-given talent. And I used...
What did they say? All he needed was 18 inches of daylight, right?
That's it. Give me 18 inches of daylight. That's all I need. And he was right. He proved that over and over again, became the youngest player ever at that time to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. He had to retire early, though, as you know, Bob, 29. So he had some injuries and cut his career short. But what a career it was.
Yeah, knee surgeries. All right, high school football. This was unbelievable. What was the attendance for this game?
Okay.
We go back to this week in 1937.
1937, Bob. If I had asked you, if you didn't even know what date, if I had asked you what is the record crowd ever to show up for a high school football game, would you have guessed 120,000 people made it to Soldier Field?
No.
I mean, that's crazy, right? Crazy, 120,000. It was Austin versus Leo, the public school champs versus the Catholic League champs, a traditional bowl game that had started a decade earlier, heavily promoted by the mayor, Mayor Kelly, and it had just grown to be so popular. Putting it into perspective, though, Bob, the standing record to this date at Michigan, the Big House, is 115,000 for a college football game. And by the way, the Chicago Bears played the Washington Redskins that same year in an NFL championship game, and they had 16,000 fans. So just crazy to think about how popular this particular game was, public school versus Catholic school and high school. And it was also a really reasonable game. It was only 50 cents to a dollar to attend. It was heavily promoted, and local fire stations used to sell tickets to this game, and it was a charity. So a lot of years, people just bought a ticket, donating their money to charity. This year, everybody showed up, and it was huge. So it's just kind of interesting to think. I looked at this this record here. They were able to get that many into Soldier Field because they just allowed so much standing room in the upper decks and all over the place. So
they had to, The Prep Bowl, it was big around here for a long time. Mm-hmm. This Week in Chicago History, more with Anna coming up.
Ain't nobody crying.
Continuing with Anna DeVlatis, This Week in Chicago History, and we're celebrating a music legend, aren't we, Anna?
Happy birthday, Mavis Staples, the fabulous Mavis Staples. Her unique blend of gospel, soul, and blues, she's just continued on being amazing year after year after year. She began singing, Bob, as a very young child in Southside Chicago Church, then joined her father's group, the Staple Singers, at age 11, started touring, and really never stopped. She just performed at the Auditorium Theater last weekend, a tribute concert on her 85th birthday, and she's, you know, her deep, soulful voice, her big, warm personality, just made her a solo star, and Mavis Staples has made it now. She's a Grammy Lifetime Achievement winner, a Blues and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. She marched along Dr. Martin Luther King for civil rights. She's had quite a life and made quite an impact on a lot of people. She sat down for an interview a few years ago, and this really made an impact on me because she said she set out to uplift people with her music, but also to change lives. She said she wanted people to really listen to her lyrics and heed the messages. And she said she knew personally of many, many people, including several Chicago gang members, who told her they changed their lives after listening to her music. Here's a clip of that interview.
My family, the Staple Singers, we made a transition back in the early 60s to move with Dr. King's message. We visited his church before he started the movement. And 11 o'clock service, we heard his sermon. Coretta was in the crowd. The kids were babies. Right. And we got back to the hotel after the service, and Pops called us all to his room and said, listen, you all, if this man can preach this, we can sing it. We just put a beat behind it. Give the kids, you know, they didn't want to hear no preaching and lectures. So you put a beat in there, and they'll get with that beat, and they'll hear what you're saying. And that's where, when we came with the Respect Yourself, and I'll Take You There, you see, and it was all about giving something to let the children know, and the young adults as well as adults, know that the end is, you know, forget that.
Right.
Don't give up. You know, you can be whatever you want to be.
And as you mentioned, she's still performing today.
Still performing. Crazy. 85 years old. Happy birthday, Mavis Staples. Still going strong. Yeah.
All right, look at the license plate in front of you. You can thank Chicago for that. That's our invention, isn't it?
It's our invention, and it's one Chicago driver in particular who kind of messed things up on the road on Michigan Avenue way back in 1902 that caused license plates to be born. It was a driver who caused a nasty wreck, an accident on Michigan Avenue, then fled the scene, and police had a really tough time, even with that few cars on the road. finding him. They couldn't identify him. They didn't know who the driver was. It led to a lengthy manhunt, lots of coverage in the local press before he was finally apprehended. And what resulted was that new legislation, Bob, just as you said, that there was an ordinance and then a legislation across the state that said, hey, we need license plates. So they put in this rule that you had to handwrite it, register it with the state. It had to be 8 inches high, and you placed it on your own vehicle. And there were major fines if you didn't have one. But that's what happened. So I know some listeners right now might have a pet peeve about cyclists, because I know there's been a little bit of a movement to do the same for cyclists who cause mm-hmm. trouble on the roads. But mm-hmm. so far, nothing yet. On that yeah. front.
Never knew that story. This was the week in 1902. And finally, where's the beef? It started back in 1983 this week, didn't it?
Such a cute commercial. It's just, you can never forget it if you lived through the 80s and then you remember hearing the Where's the Beef Wendy's commercial. This week, 1983, Bob, 80-year-old Chicago manicurist Clara Peller was discovered. She was discovered as an octogenarian and got her big break and totally found stardom with that Wendy's commercial. A casting director needed someone to do nails. He was shooting a TV ad at a local barbershop nearby, and he said, hey, why don't you come over and you do nails, and we might have a speaking part for you. But Clara had such charisma that she was immediately signed by a casting agent and was repped. And then they put her in the Where's the Beef commercial with those three little sweet old ladies all examining the burgers with a lot of bun and not much meat. But then there was the Wendy's one, and we pulled that ad, that just awesome ad, where you hear Clara, the star of the show, chime in with that famous line.
Where's the beef?
Some hamburger places give you a lot less beef on a lot of bun.
Where's the beef?
At Wendy's, we serve a hamburger we modestly call a single. And Wendy's single has more beef than the Whopper or Big Mac. At Wendy's, you get more beef and less bun.
Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there.
You want something better. You're Wendy's kind of people.
Clara, these new ads have brought you a lot of attention. Do you like it?
I love it.
I understand that you get an awful lot of fan mail.
I sure did.
What do people say in the letters?
They remind me of what I owe them.
They remind you of what you owe them?
Yeah.
What do you owe them?
Well, I owe them an estate.
Oh, okay. Will you say where's the beef for me one time?
Did I what?
Will you... Will you say where's the beef for me one time?
I sure will.
Please.
Where's the beef?
I like that. I like that. Joe Stottlemyre, tell me, why does Clara work in these ads? I mean, why is she so effective?
Because she's real. Because Clara's Clara. She's not doing someone else. And I think there's a warmth and there's a magic.
Brian Gumbel with producer Joel Stottlemyre yeah. and Clara okay. Peller. And she didn't get rich, though, did she?
She got paid scale, like less than $400 for that first ad. And
why is
the
beef?
A fight with Wendy. Yeah, right.
Wendy's
that's
got their money's
asking.
Worth.
I'm sure that happened. And Wendy's sales, by the way, jumped 31% to nearly $1 billion worldwide right after those commercials aired. And even their own executive team said they attributed it directly to Clara and those commercials. And they say, we accomplished in just a few weeks what we've been trying to build for over 14 years at that time. But
yeah.
She got paid in a couple later ads, Bob, but I don't think there was a huge payday with Wendy's. She went on to do other commercials, too, where I think she cashed in.
But a star was born. Thanks, Anna. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Where's the beef?